right, welcome back to another podcast edition of the True Crime Podcaster. Episode 2, so to speak, even though we've been on as an exclusive white-collar crime podcast for a few years, as I recently mentioned, and if you tuned in for the last episode, we are now just an overall true crime podcast, hence the name, and we're going to explore all different types of crimes, from white-collar crime, which we'll still cover, on up to even serial killers and everything in between. Now, this is a very heavy case, really, and a very disturbing one that we are discussing in this episode. It's almost, I wouldn't say listener discretion advised, but it is certainly one of the more disturbing cases, I think, in recent years. And it happened not really too terribly far from where I live, just a few hours away, actually. And I can remember when this case actually happened. At that time, I was working at the sheriff's office, so I certainly do have some memories of when this happened, and even at the time, realized it really was a very disturbing case on so many levels. And this is going back to 2009 when this case happened, and it is the case of Alyssa Bustamante. Now, for those of you not familiar with the case, as I said, stay tuned. There are some very disturbing elements in this case, and this case is actually not resolved because, as you'll see, there's some parole issues and things like that that are still kind of lingering out there. So stay tuned to check that out. And you have this one brought to you as well by our sponsor, The Weekend Angler. Check out his YouTube channel, The Weekend Angler. And as I say with each growing episode, where I live, it's getting more closer to really prime fishing season. Looking forward to that as well, because I'm a fisherman myself. So please check out that channel and stay aboard on this one. Although, like I said, there's some disturbing elements in this case. It's well worth to stay aboard and check it out and learn a little bit about a case. Again, some of you may not be familiar with this case, but you'll probably agree that it is one of the more disturbing cases that is out there. Because depraved murderer Alyssa Bustamante killed 9-year-old Elizabeth Olton in St. Martins, Missouri in 2009, a little bit west of St. Louis. And you have to ask, it just begs the question, what would possess somebody to murder a 9-year-old girl? There's no cause for it whatsoever. Some of the most sick and depraved criminals of all time in history have been the ones that have harmed and murdered children. There's just no motive for it. You have some murders that happen where a jealous spouse might kill, and the motive is, again, jealousy or betrayal or something like that. Or many times we see spouses are murdered so the other can collect insurance money. So you have the motive of greed. But what can be the motive for somebody to kill an innocent 9-year-old girl? This case definitely probably has, even to this day, we're going on 15 years since this happened, more questions than answers, as you would expect in a case like this. It's not really truly that surprising that Bustamante had gotten herself in this position. Like many criminals, she did come from a very troubled background, a troubled childhood. Not certainly out of the ordinary. In fact, it is the overwhelming majority, I would say, especially when you're talking your more serious depraved criminals and some of your more violent ones out there. The overwhelming majority of them come usually from troubled and abusive backgrounds. Once in a while, you may get one that just kind of, for whatever reason, goes off the rails and just becomes a bad seed or something. But the overwhelming solid majority of the time, your really truly depraved killers, serial killers, really depraved sexual type offenders, those types usually have very troubled backgrounds that they come from and very abusive, dysfunctional childhoods that they are brought up in. And as I said, she is no different. She and her siblings were actually being raised by her grandparents. And you know that, when I was getting this episode together, I've really seen a lot of that. And I don't know what's really truly changed, but in the last 20 years or so, I've noticed a big uptick in that, where grandparents are now raising their grandkids and the parents are absent. I think a lot of that's probably from drugs has brought a lot of that in, because a lot of these parents now have just simply lost their parenting skills, and they're no longer legally or even morally able to provide care to their children, and it's given these kids no choice but to be raised by their grandparents. And I see a ton of that, and did, especially when I was doing more juvenile cases in probation. I used to see that all the time. It's just a huge thing. When I was growing up, you saw it a little bit some, but it was not the norm like it is now almost. It almost really has become a norm, especially when you see a lot of these criminals that a lot of these young ones now, a lot of these young and juvenile offenders are being raised by their grandparents. So she was no exception in that really either, but it is something that I would say needs really some studying and to find out what's caused. Because most of you, if you're a Gen X or older, you probably didn't grow up with this being a real common thing like it is now. So I would be interested, if anyone's got input, you can feel free to email me at ryanhornvt@gmail.com. And if you want to be on and discuss this or other episodes, or if you want to be a guest, please email me at that email also, because I would love to have a discussion and get some insight. Because, like I said, I think there needs to be more research. I haven't read really any real solid research on why this is happening. I've got my own theories. Like I said, probably a lot of it is drugs, but I would be interested in finding out why this is suddenly just become so explosive. Now, drugs were involved in this situation, as you'd expect. Her mother was a drug addict, which was why she wasn't around and wasn't in her life, and the grandmother was having to raise her, and the father was in prison. And I would bet a dollar to a hole in a donut that he probably had drug and substance abuse issues as well. Now, down the street, you had little Elizabeth Olton, who, as we mentioned, was 9 years old at this time. Now, Alyssa convinced her younger sister to bring Elizabeth into the woods near their house to play and hang out, things of that sort. But no one could have dreamed the sinister and vile intentions that Alyssa had for little Elizabeth, whom I guarantee was absolutely unaware that anything possible was going to happen like this. You know, it's not uncommon for a kid in the neighborhood to ask you to come over and play, maybe go hang out in the woods. There were some woods near where I grew up at when I was a kid, and had cousin and I and some other friends. We'd ride bikes back there, fish, just walk the trails, just hang out in nature. It was just part of growing up. And if friends would ask me to go hang out in these parts, I would not have thought a thing about it and would have gladly gone. But I never could have in my wildest dreams also imagined that one of these would pull some of the things that you're going to see that Alyssa Bustamante did. Once she was lured there, Elizabeth began to strangle her, slit her throat, and stabbed her at least 8 times. You can imagine the horror for her siblings to have to witness this, and the horror that little Elizabeth had to face her last moments on earth like this. An innocent child just playing and hanging out near home, out in the woods, having fun with her friends, and the next thing you know, she has been just a gruesome murder that she's a victim of. And her body was drug to a shallow grave that Alyssa had previously prepared for her prior to murdering her. Now, as you can imagine, this is one of the more sick and depraved crimes you will see, where somebody would just decide to, on a whim, for one, use their younger siblings to lure the victim in, and then, for no reason whatsoever, to murder a 9-year-old child. Now, law enforcement officials determined that her motive was what would be called homicidal ideation. And though it's not really clinically in the psychology world classified as an illness on its own, it is believed to be the result of other mental health issues like psychosis. Now, what does this disorder actually entail? The offenders that suffer from this disorder are highly inclined to violence, for one thing. And simply put, they kill for the thrill of it, as you'll see in a little bit or hear in a little bit with some of the comments that she made. It's almost like the famous movie back in the 1990s. Again, if you're a Gen Xer, you probably remember the movie Natural Born Killers. That is a profile of an offender that suffers from this disorder. These are people who actually enjoy killing because of the rush and the thrill that they get from this. And we see this with serial killers all the time. They say one of the thrills of some of them they get is the power of seeing that victim's life leave them and their eyes go dead and the last breath leaves their body, and they have a sense of power and triumph and thrill from this. These are among, as you can imagine, the most dangerous people roaming in our society. These are the top of the line, most dangerous, depraved criminals that we have in the criminal justice system, because nobody is safe around somebody who gets a thrill and some type of physical rush and exhilaration from killing somebody. And that's what they determine her motive was. And as you'll see in a little bit, that, or you'll hear in a little bit, that was what she did with, that is exactly what she did, and that was her motive. And she put it down on pen and paper. She would actually try to scratch out some of her words on why she did it, but it was later recovered in her diary. And this is a quote, and again, kind of a listener discretion advised here, but she quoted in her diary, "I just fucking killed someone. I strangled them and slit their throat and stabbed them. Now they're dead. I don't know how I feel at the moment. It was amazing. As soon as you can get over the, oh my God, I can't do this feeling, it's pretty enjoyable. I'm pretty nervous and shaken though right now. I gotta go to church now." She then headed to a church activity after this. She was active in the local LDS church. Strangely, it is very disturbing how she was able to just pick up and go on to, of all things, a church activity after brutally murdering an innocent 9-year-old girl. Now, were there warning signs? Of course there were. There almost always is. And there were multiple warning signs along the way in her case. In fact, a couple of years earlier, she was hospitalized for a suicide attempt. And she was noted on her YouTube channel she had, and even among friends and family, she was known to be a, quote, cutter, somebody that cuts themselves, maybe sometimes either falsely sets up a suicide or maybe actually attempts one and doesn't succeed. But these are people that oftentimes very much are crying out for help, the cutters and self-destructive type behaviors like that. And she exhibited them. Obviously, a suicide attempt could have been a cry for some type of help or attention, who knows. But a couple years later from that point, this is what happens. And her YouTube video and some of the social media and things she had a lot of very goth and dark images that she portrayed. One picture, supposedly she was holding up two fingers up to her temple, kind of emulating a gun, blowing her brains out. So we know she certainly had suicidal intentions, because she did at least attempt it on one occasion that did end up getting her hospitalized, and could have been more, who knows. But yes, there were warning signs that she had certainly a lot of disturbing and mental health issues going on prior to this happening. Now, a lot of young people, we all know, if you're a middle-aged adult or older, we all remember what adolescence is like. It certainly is a very rough time. It's not unusual at all for an adolescent person to be struggling with some mental health issues, or, you know, some identity issues, or whatever, or depression, anxiety. That's just part of growing up, unfortunately, in any era. But most people who struggle with these type of things, or maybe that get into goth movements or anything like that, most of them do not commit a brutal and heinous murder, especially on a 9-year-old girl. But that's what happened here, and there were warning signs certainly along the way. And police, after this is over, understandably, Elizabeth's parents become concerned. She's reported missing. They begin a search for her, and later, through information they gather, they arrest Alyssa, and initially she pleads not guilty, which, you know, not unusual. A lot of people do that initially on in court before their attorney can kind of see what they got to work with, before the attorney may advise them to plead guilty. But somebody that's initially arrested, most of the time, especially for murders, I don't know in all my years in the business if I've seen anybody just immediately plead to a crime like that magnitude as soon as they're arrested. Often that comes much later in court, so it's not that unusual that she pled guilty out of the get-go, but that's what she did. Now, a couple years later, as I said, she would plead guilty to second-degree murder and armed criminal action. She was sentenced to life in prison with the possibility of parole supposedly coming this year, possibly in 2024, is reported. However, even if granted, she would have to serve a consecutive sentence of 30 years for the armed criminal action, meaning she may not be eligible for parole until 2054. Now, that is some good relief to Alyssa's family and friends and people that knew her and were obviously devastated by a tragedy like this, that Elizabeth won't be getting out because she's still a very young woman. Something else that needs mentioning in this, although she was a teenager at the time, she was charged as an adult in this case. Now, Missouri does have a death penalty, but since she was a minor when she committed it, even if she is convicted as an adult, they cannot sentence her to the death penalty. That's just been some cases on that come down in the Supreme Court in the last decade or two that has changed that, and I think Stanford versus Kentucky might be one of them. I remember covering this in some of the classes I teach, but that is something that doesn't happen, but a juvenile charged with an adult crime can be given a very lengthy sentence like what she had passed down on her. And she is not going to likely be out until 2054 because the judge wisely did not sentence her concurrently with the, you know, didn't sentence her to the life with the possibility of parole, you know, to run consecutively with the 30 years, because then she would be getting out, wouldn't be too awfully long, probably about another 15 years from now or so. So thankfully that did not happen, and she will not start serving that 30 years until basically this year in 2024, and it will carry to 2054, when my understanding she'll be roughly about 60 years old or so. So she is going to get out most likely if she survives prison, 60 years old. In this day and age, people are living a lot longer, so she might have some years left, although I will say people that spend a lot of years in prison, that does take their toll on them, and they certainly do have, it does certainly take a physical and mental toll on someone, and I think they usually age much faster when they're incarcerated, so I don't know how well she'll hold up if she does survive this whole time till 2054 and she can get out of jail and get out of prison. We don't know, but certainly there is a chance that she will, at least at her age, because she was so young when she committed this offense, she was about 15 or so, then she is likely to see the light of day again. So what can we do to hope anything like this never happens again? For one, you definitely have to look at the warning signs, and there were some of them, plenty on her YouTube channel, social media, and that's where youngsters especially now are communicating at, in these type of venues. And a lot of them do drop signs and wonders, and I mean signs and warnings and things like that along the way, and that's what she did. It was very clear that she had some anger and depression issues that went beyond just normal teenage moodiness. As I said a little bit ago, a teenager maybe dabbling in goth or having a little bit of moodiness or maybe some depression or anxiety here and there, completely normal for that age group, I would say. But when you get to the level that you're cutting and self-harming like she did, you have an actual suicide attempt that harms, that places you in the hospital, those are some pretty serious warning signs that something may not be right. And had she been diagnosed with the homicidal ideation at that time, maybe, if it had been, of course, it would have been a little easy to detect that probably at that stage, but something like this might have been, you know, prevented. But as I said, the very dangerous thing about this condition is the fact that these folks just kill for the thrill of it, and that is a very scary thing, folks, to think that we have people out there truly suffering from this type of disorder, and you don't know when possibly they could strike. That's a scary thing. That's why you always got to be prepared to protect yourself and your family. I recommend to people, get a gun. If not, you don't like guns, get a weapon of some type, pepper spray or a baton or something you can carry with you to places. Learn a martial art. get a guard dog, a security system, something to protect yourself, because evil is out there. And unfortunately, with evil offenders like Alyssa Bustamante, we don't know when they're going to strike. So we definitely have to be on guard in a case like this, or any case like this. Now, she had had previous treatment in other mental health facilities. It's hard to say. I'm not a mental health professional where I can diagnose anybody, so I don't know, again, if anybody missed any signs along the way. It's always easy to play backup or Monday morning quarterback in a case like this, but it's very clear that she definitely had some signs that should have been probably picked up by somebody. But I will say also, a killer with a makeup like this that will kill just simply for the thrill of it, that is very hard to sometimes predict what they're going to do. I don't think anyone in their wildest dreams that knew both of these girls would think she would kill little 9-year-old Alyssa just simply for the thrill of it, to see what it felt like. That is disturbing beyond disturbing. Now, she has actually, or did try back in the day, to appeal her sentence back in 2014. She lost this appeal, of course, and in this case, she was also ordered to pay Elizabeth's mother $5 million with a 9% interest each year until the debt is paid. Now, we talk about this all the time when this was strictly a white-collar crime podcast. We know very few offenders of any type, whether they're white-collar criminals or whether they're murderers like she is. Very few, if any of them, I wouldn't say if any, but I'll say very few, actually do pay back their restitution and things they owe their victims. Obviously, if she's going to be locked up for the next 30 years, it's doubtful she's going to be able to get her hands on $5 million or anything like that. So sadly, Alyssa's mother, or Elizabeth's mother, is just going to basically get this judgment against her. I doubt she'll see little, if any, of this actual money that she is owed. And that's the frustrating thing about these cases a lot of times, is the assailant, whether it's a white-collar criminal or a killer, as you see here, very few of them actually pay back the victims and the people that they harm. Now, Elizabeth's mom also sued one of the behavioral health agencies that treated Alyssa. No word yet on any data on how that came out. I don't know if it got settled out of court, but I bet there's a good chance she probably did get something in civil court from that, and I certainly hope so, that she is compensated in some way for her loss, although no amount of money in the world would ever be able to bring back her daughter and ease the hurt that she has most no-doubtably suffered in this case. Now, at this time that we record this, Alyssa remains locked up at the Chillicothe Correctional Center in Chillicothe, Missouri. Now, I haven't heard any updates on her 2024 parole hearing on the murder case. Some reports say that it could be as soon as July this year, 2024. I've heard others say, read other sources that said it may not be until 2027. Regardless, again, thanks to the case of the armed criminal action, it's going to ensure that she does most likely stay in prison until at least 2054. Now, supposedly there is a petition on change.org that is attempting to ensure and lobby to the parole board that she is never released. You can check that out. I think, again, it's listed on change.org. But there are a lot of family and friends that knew little Elizabeth that are rallying to ensure that a dangerous killer like Alyssa Bustamante is never released on the streets again. And I say God bless them and God bless their efforts, because she is truly in absolute danger to this world and does not ever need to walk out on the streets again, ever, under any circumstance. So prayers behind them. I hope they are successful in preventing her release at any time. I mean, even 2054 would be too soon for her release. So hopefully that won't happen. But hopefully one thing you will do is tune in for our next one. Just like before, every Tuesday we'll have new episodes on the True Crime Podcaster here. Check out our website. We've got that link now with this podcast. Please check that out, truecrimepodcaster.com. And if you need video or voiceover work, you can still check out my other website, ryan-horn.com. I said, I always got audio books and things like that coming out, done radio ads. Be glad to do a radio ad for your business or your audio book. If you're an author, I'd love to voice your publication. So please contact me for that. Be sure and follow our Facebook page, The True Crime Podcaster. Like that, share the stories, and please follow us on Apple, Spotify, Google, wherever you're hearing this. Give us that good 5-star review. We need it. And as always, please adopt your next best friend from your local shelter. Well, please be in there with us again next week, folks. Love having you aboard each and every week. God bless and take care. We will see you next time.